I cannot come. I'm sure that this situation has happened to all of us at one time or another, either by mail and now by email or by phone. You receive an invitation to a social gathering. It could be a big event like a wedding, or maybe simply an intimate evening with a few friends. Now, maybe we enjoy getting such invitations, but occasionally, let's be honest, you get an invitation you really do not want, or what simply has no interest for you. Reading the invite or hearing it on the phone, your brain goes into overdrive to seek any legitimate or legitimate sounding excuse to turn the invitation down. Now, the one fly in the ointment in all this is if you're married or have a significant other and your partner is thrilled to get the invitation, but perhaps you are not. You voice your hesitancy to your loved one and they'll say something like, "Oh, come on, it'll be fun." And sometimes it is fun, but you know, quite often our initial instincts are correct. But if you really do not want to go, you gotta come up with a good excuse, don't you? And many of the regular ones that we hear are getting kind of cliched. And people can see right through them. Kind of like the child who goes to school and says, "My dog ate my homework." Well, I found a few possible excuses that I've never heard before, but they may be helpful to you in the future. So if you want to get a notepad, I want to write these down. How about these ones? Oh, this is a tongue twister. My brother-in-law's friend's father's grandmother's sister's aunt's turtle died. And yes, it was a tragic death. I simply cannot go into the details. Or how about, I need to spend some serious time coming up with good excuses as to why I don't want to do anything tonight. Or, I do not usually go out in days that end with the letter Y. Just a personal preference. You'll like this one, Jordan. I thought of you when I pulled this one out. Unfortunately, there's a disturbance in the force. And it is not right with me right now. I never go anywhere without the force. Skywalker advises strongly against that. Would you buy that one? How about this one? My plot to take over the presidency of the book club is threat is thickening. I must stay home to make everything sure everything works out smoothly. Or how about this one? Maybe Floyd would like this one. I need to double check the expiry date on my milk. You can never be too sure, and I like to have my Cheerios in the morning. Or how about this one? I don't know how this works, but anyway, I left my body in my other clothes, and those clothes are in the wash. And my favorite one, I'm trying to be less popular. Someone's got to do it. Now, any of those help you? You know, I've noticed something of late. Have you noticed as you read the Gospels that Jesus never seems to turn down a dinner invitation? Have you noticed that? In fact, in one incident, Jesus actually invites himself to dinner over at Zacchaeus' house. The Gospels portray Jesus eating with religious elites like the Pharisees and such, but also it depicts him eating with what his contemporaries described as sinners. There is always in the Gospels a contrast between the reception that Jesus receives at a sinner's house, like Zacchaeus, and what happens when he goes to a Pharisee's house. Now, Luke 14, 1-24 is a recounting of a dinner that Jesus attended at the home of a leading Pharisee. And dinner parties in most societies are significant events. And this one was no exception. The invitations are usually extended with the guests, to the guests with generosity and grace. gardeners, with family and friends, the food is really secondary to the conversation among those who have gathered around the table. There we share news and jokes and anecdotes and so forth. Those are served along with the main course of the side dishes. There are even holidays that would not seem complete without gathering for food, like Christmas or someone's birthday. This rich environment for conversation, for mutual appreciation, was what was expected when Jesus shows up for this dinner party. But Jesus knew going into this dinner that the Pharisee had laid a trap for him. The Pharisee host had used a much-loved social custom to try and ruin Jesus, who by this point had been growing in influence and popularity. The trap here is sprung in verse 2, if you want to follow along, when a man with dropsy, and the best way to describe that is that he had swelling in his body. This man with dropsy is put right in front of Jesus. Now, we don't really know what his medical issue was, but it's very safe to say that it was pretty awful. He was suffering. This poor man who was clearly suffering terribly was not an honored guest at this party. In normal circumstances, he would never have even been invited to come inside the house. In this instance, he's a prop. The dinner party was on the Sabbath, in which the law said that no work was to be done. Jesus saw right through the plot and simply asked, is it lawful to cure people on the Sabbath or not? So Jesus said, heals the man and sends him on his way. Indicating clearly that that man who left, who had the dropsy, was not a guest of the Pharisee. How blatantly hypocritical is this scene? If the Pharisee's own child or his ox fell into a well, would he not work immediately to pull it out? Whether it was the Sabbath day or not. Jesus isn't done with the lessons here. Lessons that probably came right out of this dinner party. He says things like, when you come to a party, do not take the seats of honor when you arrive, lest you be told by the host to go to a lesser seat and be humiliated. Wait until you are invited to move up. If you exalt yourself, you will be humbled. Also, Jesus went on to say, when you give a dinner party, do not invite your family and friends who will feel obligated to return the favor. Instead, invite those who are poor, lame, or sick. People who rarely receive generosity or inclusion, like the man with dropsy. They will not be able to return the favor, but you will be repaid after the resurrection of the righteous, Jesus says. I heard a funny little story, or read a funny little story about a minister who preached on this very story about inviting the poor, etc., to your dinner. He urged his flock to make a real effort to invite the poor and the outcast in for a meal. And that week, he and his wife received several dinner invitations out to the parishioners' families. All of this is a prelude to the parable Jesus is about to tell. It is prompted by what's already gone on before and is a response to a guest at the party who said boldly to Jesus, blessed is anyone who eats bread in the kingdom of God. Now, Jesus doesn't disagree with that declaration, but instead he gives a parable directed to those who are seated at that dinner party, and in turn, any one of us who refuses to partake in the bounty of God's goodness that's poured out. Now, this parable may sound familiar to you. It's a familiar scene to us and to those who are listening to the story. Matthew has the same incident in his gospel, but in that case, it's a wedding feast. Here we are simply told it's a great dinner. The dinner is ready, we are told. And with some great urgency, the slave and the host goes out to invite people to come. And what is missed often when we look at this parable is that the first people who are approached to come to this dinner were people of means. They themselves were not impoverished. The urgency with which the invitation was given was something like, come now, drop everything, all is ready. The words great dinner may indicate that this feast was full of the finest food, the choicest wines. This dinner was the best of the best. No cost had been spared to prepare it. It was a great honor to be invited. Now, the wisest course of action, the one most of Jesus' listeners would have opted for, was to accept the invitation and go to the dinner. Instead, what happens in the story? The response of the invitees was insulting to the host. In Jesus' day, it was unheard of to respond as those in the parable. In an effort not to appear blunt, those invited make excuses as to why they cannot come. The excuses here are deliberately supposed to be seen by us as lame and ridiculous. If you scratch the surface, you see the illogical nature of these excuses. Those who made excuses, well, they simply did not want to come, and social custom made them make excuses to avoid it. Let's see how ridiculous they really are. The first person says that he bought a piece of land and he needed to go see it. Lame. I mean, who among us would buy a piece of land without actually going out to see it? The second person says they just got married, they cannot come. How is that an excuse? Are you celebrated out? How long was this marriage undertaken? Or how long ago? And finally, a man says he bought 5 yoke of oxen. That's a lot of oxen. And he needed to go and try them out. 5 yoke of oxen shows this is somebody with a lot of resources. The one who bought the oxen would likely never actually go out and handle those teams to plow this field. He'd have servants. All 3 of them simply did not want to come. They just didn't want to. They preferred to stay home and attend to trivial matters or maybe nothing at all, rather than put on their nicest robes and go and eat and be merry. And the slave returns and reports this to the host, his master. And the host's reaction is exactly how we might feel if we invited people to come over for dinner and they made all kinds of excuses why they couldn't go. In our culture, almost every invitational dinner, like a wedding banquet, has people who say they're going to come, but they don't show up. Often they don't even give you an explanation, do they? So since those dinners are often charged to the host by the plate, the host can be owed a lot of money for those notions. The host in the parable is angry. He's insulted. He's frustrated that his generosity and his hospitality is so easily refused. What to do? Food's already prepared. If no one eats it, it will spoil. So the host does something that would have completely surprised his listeners. He does not want this resource to go to waste, and neither would we. If we had that kind of leftover food around here, we might seek out a soup kitchen, or we might call First Serving or Church Out Serving, come pick it up, distribute it. You know, this happens in a lot of places, leftover food being given away. Cobb Bakery in Toronto only sells fresh made bread in their stores. And anything that's left at the end of the day has to be discarded, thrown out. So as a company, they offer their leftover loaves to shelters and food banks. Well, that seems a whole lot better than the fact that trailer loads of food go to landfills every day in this country. Now, the host could have done something similar. He could have had his servants pack it all up and distribute it to the poor. And if we heard that, we might have applauded his efforts. We might have thought that he was being very gracious, but that's not what he does. Instead, he tells his servant, go out in the streets and the lanes where the poor live or hang out. Find those who have no resources of their own and who rely on the generosity of others. But don't just give them a box of food. Invite them to come and join the feast. Come and sit at the table. You remember the man with dropsy? Jesus' listeners would have grimaced at the idea of such a rich and powerful person not only allowing, but actively inviting a man like that one with dropsy, or inviting the poor, lame, blind, to come and enjoy such a bountiful banquet. Now, how many folks in that poor category do you think turned down the invitation? I bet no one did. I suspect, like what happens around here, that when word gets around among the poor that there's free food and lots of it, which is available to anyone who came, they come. No one would be turned away. No matter how difficult your life is right now, the servant is saying, whatever went on in the past, doesn't matter, you can come. No matter what your life circumstances are going to be, it doesn't matter, you can come. Even if you do not have nice clothes to wear, come anyway. Come partake, not in the leftovers, which was their normal allotment. Come and enjoy the first serving of the best. Food that was freshly prepared and in abundance. It is reported that many came in response to that invitation. But still, the servant reported there was still room. The host sent his servant out again and charged him to find every soul anywhere that was willing to come. Turn over every leaf to find them. Knock on every door. If it were today, we might put up posters or put ads on the radio or run a social media campaign. Get the people in. Everyone was away. No one would be turned away. Still there was. And the only thing an invitee was required to do with that invitation was accept it and come. That's it. Now, we might be tempted to claim that we know the meaning of this prayer. That God gives us an invitation to the vast goodness of His grace. It's available to anyone, regardless of life circumstance, but we have to be really careful and not push this parable too far. Let this parable just rest on us. Let it seed germinate within us. Because we need to remember that this parable arises out of that statement that the guest blurted out. Blessed is anyone who will eat bread in the kingdom of heaven. No argument from Jesus. What is the bread? Is it not Jesus who said of himself that he was the bread of life? Eat of this bread and you'll never be hungry again, he said. Jesus has given those around that dinner table an invitation to partake in him, but partake in the banquet of God. The religious authorities were the ones who had all the resources to see and accept that invitation. But they made excuses, didn't they? Oh, he eats with sinners. He heals on the Sabbath. He is simply the son of a carpenter. Time and time again, Jesus offers the religious leaders an invitation to believe in him, to partake in the bread that he is offering, but they'll have no part. So what does Jesus do? Jesus serves the Lord of the feast. He goes out to people like Zacchaeus, the lepers, the lame, the blind. Those who are rejected by the establishment, he offers them a seat at the table to partake in him. And oh, how they relished in that invitation. They came in droves, tired of being excluded from hope and grace by the religious authorities and laws. They want so much to come. This is my body broken. It's up to us to decide to take that offer. But we are never given permission to try and exclude others who might feel that, well, maybe they don't measure up. If we are willing to respond to God's invitation to join his banquet, then we must be prepared to rub shoulders with whoever else comes. And let's reassure all of you that it's not like we're going to be left out. There's always room. Lots. One of the main hindrances that will keep us from having dinner with Jesus is that we can be so full of our own goodness that we won't acknowledge our need for his name. Our pride will make us say, well, wait a minute, Jesus, that's very nice of you, but let me bring a salad or a dessert. But the Lord says, no, I provide it all. You just come. Imagine a multimillionaire who sends a servant out in his limousine and goes to the poorest section of a town. The servant tells the chauffeur to stop by a street person who's in ragged clothes. He gets out and he asks, would you like to come to a feast at my master's mansion? We'll take you. Please get in. The guy on the street eyes the servant warily and says, now what's the catch? The catch? My master's a kind and generous man. He has prepared a meal like you wouldn't believe. Won't you come? Oh, I don't know. I haven't had a bath in days. I haven't washed my clothes in weeks, and these rags are all I own. I'd feel out of place in the mansion. There will be many others just like you there. The food is on the table. The dinner is about to begin. You just come. It sounds too good to be true, doesn't it? It is good. But it's also true, according to Jesus. The main catch is you have to see and admit that you're a needy street person. Spiritually, we have nothing to commend ourselves to God. I mean nothing. Salvation is not based on anything in us. In fact, it is offered freely in spite of us. It is all of God's free grace, not at all our works, lest anyone should boast. Jesus is saying to each one of us, to every person, no matter how great your sin is, come, for I have everything prepared for you to be saved from God's judgment and dine with me for eternity. All we need to ask ourselves is, will we come?